south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, today we have a couple of interesting questions that were posted on my YouTube channel. Yep, don't forget I've got a YouTube channel, more than 100 shows up there now. For those of you who want to see the photos and the slides that go along with the program. By the way, right before my January Expat Insider Seminar, I got pretty behind on the YouTubes, but now we're catching up. Hopefully within 2 weeks, we'll be right up to date. And thanks for all you listeners out there who offered to lend a hand. That door's still open. Could need some help. You never know. That said, let's get to these peculiar questions that just came off the Expat Files YouTube channel. This is from someone who calls himself Lost in America. Johnny, what if a U.S. citizen cannot get a passport because of a certain debt imposed on them for life due to continuous interest payments? What country can I move to and be accepted and become a legal new citizen? Signed, a man in the States, lost in America. Well, that raises an issue that brings us into some murky territory. Stuff that we talk quite a bit about at the Expat Insider Seminar because, you know, a lot of this stuff really is confidential. Not that it's illegal, just sort of delicate and confidential. Well, it might be illegal where you are, but here in Latin America, not necessarily so. Many, many things that are illegal up in the first world are completely 100% legal down here. For example, insider trading. Nope, down here there are no such thing as insider trading laws. That's why so many politicians get filthy rich, above and beyond all the sociopathic stealing they do. For example, if politicians know there's a new airport being built somewhere, or highway, or shipping dock, of course they know all about that stuff well ahead of the public. Why? Because they're voting on it or authorizing it. So it's common that they'll phone up their friends, cronies, and relatives. They'll arrange to buy up land, put out the word well ahead of time to their friends about the contracts. Now, that's totally unethical, of course, but not illegal. But since when has ethics ever gotten in the way of a politician going for a buck? And did you know that there's no law against Latin politicians receiving gifts from anyone? Whereas up in the States, it's totally illegal. In fact, during the boots on the ground portion of my Expat Insider Seminars, we go through some very wealthy neighborhoods, as well as some very crappy ones. And sometimes, when it's in the plan and the traffic's okay, we'll go right by one of the houses of the former president of Guatemala, one that's in jail right now, by the way. Like expat Eddie says, they all get 2 terms down here, you know. 1 term in office and 1 term in prison. Anyway, this former pusbag presidential crook, are there any other kind, has a multi-million-dollar house that was a gift given to him by a big international pharmaceutical company whose name you would surely recognize. And down here, anyone who keeps up with that kind of news knows it, but no one ever makes a stink about it because it's perfectly legal. Again, an unethical kind of dirtbag move, but, you know, it's not illegal. And then there's the fact that another past president, who also did jail time, has a huge yacht and a personal helicopter. Also, gifts from well-wishers. Million-dollar gifts with no strings attached, of course. But I digress as usual. Anyway, our original question is all about the fact that some people may not be able to get a passport up in the States because of past or present problems they're having with, maybe it's the IRS, debts, misdemeanors, felonies, non-payment of alimony, child support, or maybe they're on some kind of government watch list or feces list. That's easy to do these days, you know. And now I hear they'll even hold up a passport for non-payment of student loans. Yep, it's worrisome, all right, and it could happen to you. Which is why if you don't have a passport or one that's about to expire, you got to go out and get one while you can. So, if you do not or cannot get a U.S. passport, you're not going to be able to get a foreign country passport either. Not in the traditional manner of getting a second passport anyway. The traditional route being, for example, planning to go to a third world country like Honduras, Guatemala, Salvador, whatever, Costa Rica. Then, once you're there in person, applying for temporary or permanent residency, which normally leads, after 5 years or so, to passport and nationality. However, if you don't have a U.S., Canadian, or European passport in your hand, you'll never even get to step one. Because, you see, All the way along that process, you're going to have to pull out a valid passport from another country. That's part of the process. So if you're from the States or Canada and you're not issued a passport, you won't even be able to get out of your country legally to get down to Mexico or any other third world country. Of course, you'd think it would be ridiculously easy to sneak out of the U.S., slip into Mexico, and move on down south if you like. A lot of people have done that, especially back during the Vietnam days when they had the draft. In fact, there are still a certain number of gentrified Jerry Garcia types down here who've certainly gone native and have families, kids, even grandkids, and some have very nice little gentrified hippie gringo businesses. And even after 40-some years, a lot of them are not quite legal, and they don't really care. In fact, the governments of most Latin countries are so chaotic and disorganized and, well, on permanent mañana time, they just don't go out of their way to bother anyone and leave these guys alone. So, as a rule, you'll find if you stay within one particular Latin country, you pretty much never even have to carry your passport or any kind of ID on you at all. Unless, of course, you're driving a car and you get pulled over at one of those routine cop stops, then, of course, you'll need to show them something. But even then, I've seen gringos get a complete pass by just saying that they left their documents in their hotel or at home. Now, locals can't get away with that, but you can, and it's part of your gringo advantage. By the way, that works especially well when you claim no hablo español, whether you do or not. Again, we're talking about off the gringo tourist trail. You probably won't be able to get away with that in Costa Rica, Chile, Panama, and most of Mexico, where the cops are pretty wise as to how to squeeze some dough out of gringos. But back to the point that you're going to have a valid passport from your country, whether it's the States, Canada, or in Europe somewhere, to come down to any Latin country, or any country for that matter, and go through that residency process that leads to a passport in a second country. However, if you have money, that changes things quite a bit. There are ways to get a legitimate second passport, even if your first and primary passport is expired or hasn't been or can't be renewed for whatever reason. In fact, there are some countries in the world that offer what they call citizenship by investment, which means you come up with the cash, we'll give you the passport. Most of them are small countries like Malta, Cyprus, and five nations in the Caribbean, Grenada, Antigua and Barbuda, St. Kitts, Nevis, Dominica, and more recently, St. Lucia. In fact, decades ago, St. Kitts and Nevis tried citizenship by investment, and at first, there weren't many takers. In fact, they almost discontinued the program, but luckily, they didn't. In recent years, with what's happening up in the first world, like Big Brother, TSA, currency controls, loss of freedoms, etc., and with much of the world also on the edge of imploding, those citizenship by investment programs are attracting more and more people, but they are expensive. Here's how it works. You can apply either to buy your citizenship, which admittedly sounds crude if not illegal, but believe me, it isn't. So after you pay, get this, around $200,000 to $250,000 for a single person, the approval and your passport comes within 2 to 3 months. Or instead, you can get a pretty much instant passport by buying into an approved real estate project that the government says will qualify you for around $400,000 or more. Now, you'd think for that kind of dough, it wouldn't have too many takers, but believe me, a lot of people are jumping in, especially people from China and Indonesia. In fact, so many Asians are now starting to jump on board that other small, mostly island countries are starting their own programs. However, the good news is that with more countries jumping on board, the competition will force those prices down. And don't get me wrong, these are real bona fide passports, legit, throughout the world. So at a couple of $100,000 a pop, they pretty much only attracted wealthy people from more or less unstable regions of the world like Asia, Russia, India, Pakistan. In fact, all the Stans and Stashes, and of course, wealthy Middle Easterners, but increasingly now, Canadians and Americans. And here's the supreme irony for you. At present, the U.S. is the foremost objector to these citizen by investment programs, and they're the first ones who'll hassle a person with such a passport when they come through a U.S. border, inferring that people who get these kind of passports are covering up for some kind of financial crime. The irony being, if you're a foreigner and you have millions of dollars to invest in the U.S., like, for example, George Maggot Puss Soros, the U.S. State Department has been known to grant those persons U.S. citizenship. Yes, a real U.S. passport. But that stuff's never publicized. It'd be bad PR. Such hypocrites, huh? It's the same thing. Passport by investment. but they poo-poo everyone else who's doing it. So bottom line is, the U.S. and other first world countries put the squeeze on their own population. Many, many people are starting to, or at least thinking about, voting with their feet. And who's going to benefit? Mostly those small Caribbean islands that need the dough. In fact, that's why those programs exist, because these small countries don't manufacture anything. They've got no real exports. All they've really got going is tourism. And as tipping points fall and the world implodes, so goes tourism as one of the first casualties. As belts tighten, people take their vacations closer to home. In fact, if I was in the market, and I'm not, I'd be shorting Norwegian and Carnival cruise lines right now. So, bottom line, very, very few of us can afford to dump a couple hundred grand just to get a passport for another country. Not to mention, if you've got a significant other, grandma, grandpa, drunken Uncle Timmy, and a couple of kids, you can add a couple of hundred grand more to the bottom line. Now we're talking about real money. Which is why it's imperative that you keep your U.S. or Canadian or European passport valid, at least for a while. That way, you'll save a few hundred grand, because you'll need it and it'll have to be in order to apply for a temporary or permanent resident leading to a passport by doing it the traditional way, the way we talk about on the show here all the time. Oh, and for those of you so pissed off at the way Uncle Sam and Big Brother are treating you, and your ultimate goal is to renounce your U.S. citizenship, I say, hold off for now. And absolutely wait until you get a passport from another country. That's imperative, because you don't want to be a stateless citizen. That would not be good. By the way, if you feel that way about renouncing your citizenship, do not do it. If you only have residency in another country, you must wait till you get a passport so that you're a legitimate citizen from somewhere else, therefore can travel. But really, the best of both worlds is to just vote with your feet, but maintain your U.S. or Canadian or European passport, as well as another passport from a third world country, maybe even two. That way you can freely decide which passport you want to travel on wherever you're going, and that will decide the level of anonymity that you have and the size of your personal and financial footprint. Of course, you know you'll always have the biggest footprint when you're traveling with a U.S. passport. For example, would you rather travel through Europe or the Middle East as a U.S. citizen or a Bolivian citizen? I mean, if things get rough, who are they going to toss off the plane? The American or the Bolivian? Duh, I wonder. All right, moving on, let's talk about this email from Kiefer, who, like me, is 100% into doing things solar, getting off the grid. He says, "Hi, John. Came across your podcast and was very intrigued. For a long time now, I've been thinking of going south of the border to start a solar business. Back in 2010, I went to LA in California to attend an international solar convention to help a friend in the show. He has a solar panel company in China. At the end of the show, I picked up a 150-liter solar water system for $160. By the way, it's me, Johnny, again. That'd be pretty much the equivalent of having a 40-gallon hot water heater, the traditional tank type, in your house. All right, then," Kiefer says, "I got it so cheap because the Chinese company didn't want to ship that big system back to China. Anyway," he says, "after a month, I decided to set it up by my swimming pool. Boy, I found out that thing is really burning hot. By the way, I live in Arizona, and every day I hear that rumbling sound coming out of the water tank." Okay, it's me, Johnny, again. Yep, I have a similar system at one of my houses in Latin America. And yes, that rumbling sound is completely normal. And you can only hear it when you're within maybe 10 feet of the thing. You see, it's an isolated system. You've got the water in this big tank being heated by a series of parallel glass tubes tilted to about a 30-degree angle to the earth, with the colder water flowing down in the tubes and the hotter water, as it's heated by the sun, going up into the horizontal tank, which is elevated a few feet off the ground. And that water in the big tank is not under pressure at all. In fact, on top, there's a little canister that's open to the air, so it can't develop any pressure. So then how do you get the hot water out of it at pressure? Well, that's because your regular hot water line from your house winds through a coiled copper tube in the horizontal reservoir. And the heat gets transferred from that water to the cold water that's inside the copper tube, heating it up, of course, and that's what goes to your hot water faucets in the house. Now, that bubbling and rumbling you hear, especially when the sun's out in full force, that's actually the sound of the water being heated in the big tank and the glass tubes as the water nearly approaches boiling temperature. Yep, on a bright sunny day, especially in Latin America, the water will get up to boiling temperature. You'll see that with your temperature sensor readout in your hallway or your kitchen. So when you're near the unit, you will hear some bubbling and gurgling, and that's completely normal. That means the water in your big tank is superbly hot. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not boiling away and evaporating. It's just near or at boiling, but there's no pressure in the system, so not to worry. Now, water expands when it gets hot, so when the water volume expands too much, it'll run off through a little tube onto your roof. Under the worst conditions, that runoff will only be a constant kind of drip, and only under extremely sunny conditions, which is exactly what you want. By the way, that 150-liter system that Kiefer picked up for $160 was a great deal, all right. A system like that down here in Latin America, installed complete, would probably run around $800. I personally have a system that's twice as big. 300 liters, the equivalent of around a 70 or 80-gallon hot water tank. And the whole thing installed, around $1,000 to $1,200. And if you remember on a past show, I mentioned that in the States, those systems are running about $3,000 to $5,000. That would be triple to five times as much. Why? Well, that's because in most of the U.S. and Canada, you get some freezing, and those systems will not tolerate freezing. It has to be a different style of water heater, much more complicated, a different kind of closed heat exchanger with antifreeze, more parts, more electronics, more cost. But in Southern California and in places like Arizona, where Kiefer is, the system he's talking about works just fine. But again, if you're in a climate that has some freezing or frost, you can't use a simple system like that. Anyway, Kiefer continues, when my mom moved to Tucson, I put her in one of my rental units and installed the solar water heater system on her roof. It worked out perfectly with two or three people using it. So I cut the gas company off completely. And for the following couple of years, she only missed one or two days a year without hot water. Okay, again, it's me, Johnny, chiming in. You know, I found the same thing happens to me here in Latin America. I had two or three days without hot water over a whole year. Of course, I have a backup water heater, propane gas type, so I just turned that on for those 3 days. However, now I realize I didn't have to do that at all. All it takes is figuring out the right timing and looking at your sun cycle, and you can eliminate those few cold day water problems completely. Just keep an eye on the temperature readout and consider the following. All right, let's talk about the English system in Fahrenheit now. If the temperature in your big reservoir tank is at least 130 degrees, that'll be your minimum temperature to get a shower or two. Now, normally at the end of a sunny day, that temperature gauge will read the hottest. Could be nearly boiling, 212, meaning at 6 o'clock at night, you could probably get 10 hot showers out of it. Now, that's the trick. If, for example, let's say it's 200 degrees at 6 o'clock at night, by 6 o'clock in the morning the next day when the sun first rises, if you haven't used any hot water at all throughout the night, it'll probably drop around 10, even 15 degrees. That's what normally happens at night when temperatures cool down and the unit cools too. However, that means when you check the unit at 6 in the morning, it's still 185 degrees, which is good for about 5 long, nice, hot showers. So, for example, if there are 2, 3, 4, or 5 people taking a shower in the morning, and the unit does drop down to 130 degrees, let's say by 9 in the morning, well, not to worry, because the sun's coming up and getting strong, and by 2 or 3 in the afternoon, it'll be back up to around 200 degrees. And even during the rainy season, when you might get 3 or 4 hours of rain, the unit's still picking up a little heat. So the point is, it'll take you a month or two to figure out the most opportune and not so opportune times to take a shower or use any significant amount of hot water for whatever purpose. But now, after having a unit myself for over a year, I know exactly how to handle that thing, and I'm never going to run out of hot water again. In fact, even if it's overcast and cloudy for 3 or 4 continuous days, you'll still get some residual heat and be able to work it out. So anyway, Kiefer says, Johnny, I did explore the possibility of starting the solar water heater business here in the States, but since people already have their heaters, it doesn't seem to be a great business opportunity. Then I found out that across the border in Mexico, the majority of the population don't even have hot water. But I was told in Mexico, most people are poor and therefore won't buy or can't afford water heaters. However, the funny thing is that at Christmas season, I went to a fashion outlet and saw plenty of Mexicans buying tons of fashionable stuff. So apparently they have money but choose to spend it on other things. My question, Johnny, is can you give us some pointers about the solar business in Latin America? I've seen a few solar installations in Mexico, for example, in a schoolyard and a multi-mart parking lot, but it has a long way to go. Then he says, in my trips to Mexico, I've never seen an installed solar water heater. Though I guess I have to move south of the border myself to actually evaluate the market. By the way, like you, I have a master's degree, though mine is in biophysics. I also have an MBA in entrepreneurship. I know, Johnny. Both of these degrees are useless, as you often like to say in your broadcasts. However, all of my life's experience so far to this point seems to be preparing me to go south of the border. Unfortunately, I just missed your January seminar and would really like to sign up for your next one. Best regards, Kiefer. P.S. I know you get a ton of emails. I hope you have time to respond to this one. All right, Kiefer, thanks for that. Now, first off, I'd like to say your MBA will qualify you for an apron job at Starbucks or McDonald's. But that degree in biophysics, don't sell yourself short, even if it seems esoteric. Believe me, I know how many advanced mathematics courses you have to take as a physics major. Same with engineering. Hey, I slogged through it, and believe me, there were no my jammy spring breaks or student union or wapatuli parties on the menu. That was on the liberal arts menu, and why, they're working at Starbucks now. Which means you have a very big brain packed in that cranium of yours. In other words, like most engineers and people in the hard sciences, you have high-level problem-solving skills and therefore are a survivor. So probably like me, you took a lot of toasters and TVs apart as a kid, changed the transmission in the old man's car, and probably did your share of damage around the house, taking all manner of things apart. I know. Anyway, in regards to solar hot water installations here in Latin America, I'm starting to see them pop up in all Latin countries I visit, even countries with what I call severe lag time, like Paraguay, Bolivia, Ecuador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, and Honduras. But you're right, you don't see them in middle and lower middle class neighborhoods, only gated, guarded subdivisions. Which means it's the higher end Latin crowd that are just starting to buy into these things. And luckily, they're very dependable and don't need maintenance. That's the key. And I've noticed now that even the big hardware store chains here in Latin America are carrying solar units. Yep, you buy them at a hardware store and they'll do the complete installation for you too. And they're all the same kind of Chinese units you're talking about, with a couple of German and Israeli models thrown in too. But they're not made in Germany or Israel. If you look at the labels closely, you'll see they were designed in Germany and Israel, but made in China. But you'll pay more, half to twice as much, for the German and Israeli label. Even though they pretty much look like they came off the same assembly line in China, only they've got different colors and logos. They all seem to have the same glass collector tubes, but the big tank could be either painted enameled or stainless steel. Depends on the brand. So they're all basically the same, with the only difference being the guarantee that they carry. By the way, those solar water guarantees down here go anywhere from 1 year to 20 years, which won't amount to anything if you don't get it installed by a company that's doing a lot of them and has been around for some years. So that's the key. Buy from an outfit or a hardware store that's been around for quite a few years. By the way, with a lot of installations like that and many other household purchases, you'll pay half down when you buy the thing and sign the paperwork and the rest on delivery. Or in this case, after it's installed and working properly. But note, if you offer to pay the whole thing up front before delivery, you can often get a nice discount. However, that's not always a good idea. Because if I've learned one thing after all these years in Latin America, Latins seem to have no interest in keeping you as a valued long-term customer. They just want to make that sale now and get the dough. Which is why, after you've bought pretty much anything, the customer service really sucks. Which, in an offhanded way, is part of your gringo advantage. Now, when Kiefer mentioned in his email that Latins rarely even have hot water in the houses, boy, is that true. And here's a stat for you. About 70% of the houses in Latin America only have cold water plumbing, which means they could never adapt to solar because they haven't got the hot water pipes running in the house. And about 20% of the homes have no indoor plumbing at all, leaving about 10% of homes plumbed for cold and hot water like you have there up in the States and Canada, with only about half of those homes having the actual hot water central heater installed. So do you get it? Only about 5% of Latin homes have central hot water. So then what about the other 5% of Latin homes that are plumbed for hot water and ready to go? Well, they just have the plumbing but never bought the central hot water unit, whether electric, gas, solar, or otherwise. On the other hand, I'd say about 50% of Latin Americans have one of those dangerous-looking point-of-use hot water shower heads, you know, with the wires hanging out everywhere. That always scare the hell out of gringos. However, in all my time down here, I've never heard of anyone actually being electrocuted. You don't hear it on the news, you don't read it in the papers. That's not to say people don't get shocked here and there. Everyone's had that happen. I'm sure you've had a few zingers up in the States here and there too, haven't you? Anyway, they're not at all as dangerous as they look, even though they look like they were wired by the Three Stooges. That said, even though half the homes in Latin America have them, 50% of those aren't working. They either got fried, clogged, or pooped out a long time ago, and in any event, nearly all Latins are well used to taking showers in what they call agua tibia, which means straight out of the cold water tap. They never complain about it, not like us. So just a warning, if you're invited to stay at a Latin home, don't be surprised if you have to take a agua tibia shower. Don't make a stink about it, just grin and bear it. I assure you, the cold water coming out of the tap in Latin America is not like the cold water coming out of the tap in Minnesota. Now, that said, since 95% of Latins are accustomed to their agua tibia, meaning room temperature tap water showers, I don't think there's going to be huge demand anytime soon for solar hot water heaters, not at $1,000 a pop. Because remember, there are very few Latin Americans that make $1,000 a month, which is well below the poverty line by U.S. standards. But like Kiefer said, around Christmas time and holidays, they will pile into the malls and buy all kinds of clothes and fashions, but you know, we're talking about small feel-good purchases there. So Kiefer, don't expect that anytime soon is going to be your big run on solar hot water heaters. However, complete solar electric packages that'll get a house off the grid, well, that's another subject, and I will talk about that on an upcoming show. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show now, and I'd like to remind you who'd like to attend my upcoming July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar in and around Guatemala again. If you want to get on the early bird list, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Yep, 90% of the time we'll be well off the gringo tourist trail, so you'll get a very good sample of the things I've been talking about over all these years. In the meantime, to get your Plan B underway, don't forget to go to expatplanb.com and check out my Expat Essentials course. There's no better way to get you on the fast track to a Plan B, ultimately leading to voting with your feet like I did and live happily ever after. Just go to expatplanb.com.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.